Hey, it's Pamela from Pine Hill. You're listening to WGXC Acra, Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM.
Hello, WGXC listeners. This is Kelly McCon. Campbell Hudson is hosting its monthly dinner on Tuesday, February 6th at 5:30 in our Solaris building, 360 Warren Street. Come experience community and meet new people and old friends over a freshly prepared meal made by our local volunteers. Everyone is invited and no one will be turned away. We'll be glad to see you there, and please bring a friend.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, featuring first-run and repertory films at movie theaters located in Rhinebeck and Saugerties, as well as live music, filmmaker conversations, staged readings, community events, variety shows, magic, comedy, and more. The latest schedules, as well as upcoming pop-up events at the Community Theater in Catskill, can be found at upstatefilms.org.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of James Graylin in Denver, Colorado. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports in the Times Union that while about half of all school districts in New York see cuts to their foundation aid, three local schools are facing larger cuts. The Taconic Hills School District in eastern Columbia County could see state aid cut by about 34%. Wyndham Ashland Jewett in the northern Catskills faces a cut of 42%, and Onteora in northern Ulster County could see a cut of 39%. Foundation aid is determined by a complicated process that considers school population and wealth changes in the district, but previously the state was not allowed to give less aid to a district than the year before. Governor Kathy Hochul changed that rule a year ago, and now these three school districts face large funding cuts. Lynette Brunger, the superintendent of the Taconic Hill School District, said, and I quote, "For me, what's frustrating about this is that we have been very fiscally responsible as a district, and we continue to work to make decisions that are in the best interest of our children with the best interest of the classroom and learning environment," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Aaron Katursky and Peter Chatter-Lambos report for ABC News that New York Attorney General Letitia James said she will seize the former president's assets if Donald Trump does not pay the $354 million he was ordered to pay in his civil fraud case. James said, and I quote, "If he does not have the funds to pay off the judgment, then we will seek judgment enforcement mechanisms in court, and we will ask the judge to seize his assets," end quote. Last week, Trump was fined $354.8 million, plus about $100 million in interest, after Judge Arthur Engoron said he had inflated his net worth in order to get more favorable loan terms. James even said she could seize Trump's 40 Wall Street skyscraper. James said, and I quote, "We are prepared to make sure that the judgment is paid to New Yorkers, and yes, I look at 40 Wall Street each and every day," end quote. Read more about this story at ABC News. Courtney Ward reports for News 10 that New York's commissioner of the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation is resigning. Basil Sagos has led the DEC for more than 8 years. But in a letter to staff, Sagos wrote, and I quote, "This is the right decision for me and my family. It is time for a new chapter," end quote. Sagos is the longest-serving DEC commissioner, starting the job in 2015. And you can read more about this story at News 10. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the Donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, February 23rd. Local early morning temperatures range from 32 degrees in Steventown to 34 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 34 degrees. A snowy mix early on turns to just rain right after sunup and should end outright by 4 p.m. We get a high of 48 at 3 p.m. That gives us a small window this afternoon to get outside before the cold plunge overnight. We dip to 23 degrees, then tomorrow will be dry but have a high of only 31. Winds will make it feel rather bitter going outside. 14 faucet dripping degrees overnight takes us into a dry and chilly Sunday. With a high of 39, a light dusting on the ground leads us into a Monday with a high of 48. Sunset today will be at 5:23 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:36 a.m. Looking way up, we see G1 class magnetic storm watch is up for this weekend as we are expecting an Hadouken. X-class flare chances are at 20%. Plasma winds will be slow at 318 kilometers per second with a thin density of 4 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair below 15 megahertz overnight. There are no chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 46. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate. Just reminding you, in these weird times, local voices become so much more important. And if you want to help keep them loud and proud, head on over to WGXE.org and hit that donate button. Become one of the heavy hitters for free expression, otherwise known as a sustaining supporter.
Yo! Hold up! Time out! Time out! Y'all take a chill! You need to cool that shit out! And that's the double truth, Ruth.
Nathan McLaughlin, Camp Hill Hudson Radio Group. Good morning, WGXC listeners, and welcome to Live by Life program. I'm Kelly, a member of the Camp Hill Hudson Media Group, and my other colleagues in the studio with me are Kim and Lori and Michael. Today, we have a special guest.
Nathan McLaughlin lives and works in Hudson, New York. He is a musician and artist, as well as former executive director of the Camp Hill Hudson community. Nathan's musical focus is on the intersection of acoustic and electronic instruments, the human being and going to the center. He's also a community member of Camp Hill. Welcome.
Welcome. Hi, Nathan.
Hello.
This is Michael and Lori. Say hello.
Hello, Nathan.
Hey, Lori. Hey, thanks, everybody, for having me.
Nice to have you in the studio here, and Tom's in the background. So we're going to get right to it, and Lori and I want to ask you this question. So, Lori, you want to ask Nathan, where were you born?
I was born in Florida with my brother. It was nice down there.
And you, and you're a special guest today, host. Yeah.
Host.
Shall we ask Nathan where he was born?
Yeah.
Let's ask him. You want to ask him?
Where you've been born, Nathan?
Yeah. I was born in a town called Haverty Grace in Maryland.
And where did you grow up?
Yeah, and I grew up in the town across the river from that, in a town called Perryville, Maryland, which is kind of at the top of the Chesapeake Bay.
That's far.
Maryland.
That's far?
Is it far? It's like 4 hours from here. It's not that far.
Yeah, and we are in the Hudson studio here, by the way, just so people know. So, yeah, not too far, but far enough.
Far enough.
Yeah.
That's Kelly.
Tell us about your family and childhood, and tell us how you met your wife.
Okay. My childhood was spent in the forest a lot, kind of lived in a very rural area. I had access to a lot of forest, so that's where I spent a lot of my time.
In Maryland?
In Maryland. And spent a lot of time there. I didn't have, where I grew up, there weren't a lot of kids on the road or anything, on the streets. It was pretty rural, so spent a lot of time in the woods hanging out and getting to learn about nature. Pretty musical household. My mom and sister were playing music in the house a lot, but I didn't play music as a kid, really. I didn't really start playing that until college, which is where I met my wife, Maria, you asked about. I met my wife, Maria, in York, Pennsylvania, York College, which is where we were going.
York College. And, that gets actually to the next question. Tell us where you went. Tell us about college and what your major was. And what did you do after you graduated?
Yeah. It's kind of funny to talk about it because I have a degree in marketing, which is, a funny thing. It's not like I do corporate marketing or something.
Yeah.
but that's what I have a degree in. I have a minor in music industry, and I was really thinking to go work for record labels after college. And I did some of that in college. I worked for Madonna's label, Maverick, and I worked for some punk rock labels.
Okay.
Hellcat Records, some others.
You have any interesting stories from that time? Working for that record company, or
I mean, it was cool. You know, I would get packages in the mail, and my job was to go around to all the record stores and promote shows and promote albums. So I would get to go see shows. I would get to go backstage, meet bands. I think the big band at the time on Maverick was Muse, a band called Muse. So okay. I got to go see Muse. And, you know, when I was doing that for Hellcat Records, I got to go to a lot of cool shows, meet a lot of cool punk bands back then. Not really any great stories, though, honestly. It was kind of anticlimactic doing that work. You would think it sounds a lot more glamorous than it was. It wasn't that.
Like most jobs, probably.
Yeah, like most jobs. So I didn't end up doing that, and I graduated and started doing this work where I was doing job training for inner city youth, and did that for a couple years, but at the time my wife was already in Camp Hill, and I was just increasingly intrigued by what was going on there. That was at Beaver Run. Laura, you know about Beaver Run.
Right.
You were a student there a long time ago. So I went to Beaver Run to be a teacher's aide, and that's where I first met Camp Hill and anthroposophical music.
Yeah. That's well, you're kind of one step ahead of our questions, because Kim was going to ask what you just mentioned, yeah? Which was, how did you...
Tell us how you got involved in the Camp Hill organization and where it took your life.
Yeah.
Maybe to reiterate, do you remember the specific moment where, like, you really... It was like, oh, this is a Camp Hill or...
I do.
Yeah.
I had been, you know, going out there because my wife was in seminar. They call it the Academy now.
Yeah.
And so I would go there for presentations or different little events. I didn't really have a concept of what that was.
Yeah. This is in Pennsylvania, like 50 miles west of Philly.
Yeah. Kind of. Yeah. Yep, Chester County. Yeah. You know, and it can be hard to really understand what's going on there other than it's like beautiful and the people are really interesting and mm-hmm. all of those things. I was becoming kind of increasingly frustrated in my work because it was a nonprofit owned for-profit company and there were just a lot of ethical dilemmas happening there.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember saying to my wife, like, you know, I don't care what they need. Like, I would go be the janitor, which is actually, that's still a job I think about going to do because I like to do that. But they didn't need a janitor. They had that. They needed a one-on-one classroom aide. So I said, yeah, I'll do that. So this is a fun story because I went out. They were like, yeah, maybe you could come have an interview. And coming from the business world, I thought, oh, okay, I know what an interview is. it's not what that was. I met with this guy, Bernie.
Yeah.
For folks that know, Bernie has this amazing long beard and just, oh, he's always wearing a flannel shirt. So I meet up with Bernie and we go on this little walk and he has this little note card, like an index card in his pocket. And he keeps pulling that out because it has information on it. I guess he wants to ask me about. And we're just, you know, so it's this sort of interview. But then he's like, okay, I need you to go up to the schoolhouse and meet this teacher. That's who you would be maybe working with. Mm-hmm. I want you to go meet her. And I thought, well, that's strange. Like, I don't know her at all. I only know, like, three people there. Like, how what am I going to do? But what he was trying to do, I think, was see if I could, like, navigate a social situation, go up there and introduce myself and kind of just navigate that, which I did. And then the teacher did something like that to me as well. I'm in the classroom just kind of observing, and then it's time for recess. So we go to the playground, and there's this young man, and I could tell that she like put me out there without any instruction to see if I could kind of immerse myself in that. And I really wanted to do this. So for people that know me, that's not really my personality, but I did that, ended up, I got that job and I went there and thus began, and not to be overly dramatic, but it's true, a sort of like life changing year and a life changing experience that changed the whole trajectory of my life to such an extreme that I thought I'll never go work in an office again. Yeah.
Kelly.
Yay to no office.
Yeah. Well, that didn't last, but that's another story.
Kelly.
But the thing about it, and it's different. What changes people is different for each person, obviously, when they go to Camp Hill. But for me, it was so enjoyable to be relieved of myself. Mm. I had to give myself over because these were like really intense classroom situations I'm in. So all day long, I have no choice but to be fully in it and in service. And I found that liberating. It's stressful, but I also found that it changed really who I was drastically.
Do you remember how old you were, if you don't mind sharing, when you had that initial interview?
26. I'm 43.
Yeah. Yeah, and that whole how Bernie and the teacher, that's kind of the Camp Hill way, right? It's kind of like, and let's see who you are.
I liked that so much that I did that to countless people in Camp Hill in all the years since. For folks at Camp Hill Hudson, if you remember me ever sending random people into tea break without me there, that's what I was doing.
Yeah,
I'd be like, the tea breaks, a couple floors down. And if the person could do that, and then I would come down maybe 15 minutes later and see if they had kind of settled into that, then they're good to go. Or if we didn't have the time, I'd be like, I want you to come back on Wednesday at 10 a.m. And if they did that, showed up and did all of that on their own, then they're good to go. And you're working with someone who successfully navigated that. That's Svetlana. She did that.
Okay.
And I remember coming down and seeing, yay, Svetlana, seeing her in the tea break, and I thought, well, she belongs.
It's also very minimal. It's not very taxing. It's just like, it's like so much less, I have to do this to help them, whereas actually you do the opposite.
That's right. And that's an important lesson for people to learn kind of up front. Helping someone is a bonus to being with them on their journey. And I found that a lot of my days at Beaver Run were spent just walking alongside someone on their journey. Someone's having a tough day in class. They send me, because I'm the classroom aide, out onto this trail system. I spent hours and hours on this trail system. So I'm just alongside them while they're having their bad day. And that's an honor and a joy, really.
Yeah. Being there.
The only time it was nerve-wracking was when Maria was pregnant. So she was very pregnant, and I was so worried because I didn't really carry a cell phone or anything at the time. I had to go get a cell phone just in case I'm in the woods and she goes into labor. I would need to get
be
back.
Alerted.
She was in the schoolhouse, but still, I'd want to get back there because otherwise I could be out for hours without a phone or anyone really knowing where I am.
Did you get notified while you were?
She go into worked labor? In the classroom until the bitter end. I mean, she was so pregnant in that classroom because she was working.
Oh,
she was a teacher.
Yeah, because your first son was born in June.
Yeah.
So she made it through the school year and then...
Yep, by like a week.
Gave birth on her own birthday.
gave birth on her birthday, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What a gift that must have been.
I know.
Yeah. As much as I'd love to keep picking your brain about that, I think we should go to the next question. Kim, do you see? You want to?
How long have you lived in Columbia County, and what brought you and your family here?
Sure. So I've been in Columbia County. It'll be 11 years in May, which for me is like a record to be in one place. Camp Hill brought me here. I was in Camp Hill, Minnesota with my family before I came here. And I came here because I started doing the outreach work on behalf of Camp Hill and needed to be in a more centrally located place. So I came to Hudson because Camp Hill Hudson had just bought Solaris. And it was almost an empty building, as I'm sure Michael remembers and Lori remembers. Because Lori, you were already there. And they had an office. And so there I am back in the darn office, you know, after all those years of thinking I'm done. the office, there I am.
But it was in a different way, though. Being directly involved on the ground, so to speak, especially with children at Beaver Run, which is very intense. I mean, I was at Triform, and that was intense enough. But but you had that sort of direct connection still, even though.
Absolutely, yeah. You know. Yeah, and, you know, we had been life-sharing and house parenting in Minnesota.
So Lori and I want to ask you this question. Yeah, so you kind of, well, you didn't quite allude to it, but let's ask him, how did you join Camp Hill Hudson?
How did you join Hudson?
Well, you know, if for anyone that's spent time around Camp Hill Hudson, it's hard not to join Camp Hill Hudson. And I was just talking to Maria. You can ring the bell because it's very true.
I didn't want to overkill it, but yeah. Yay. How could you not want to join? We love that.
Well, I was talking to my wife the other day because in the mission statement at Camp Hill Hudson is play. Playing is part of the mission, which is the only Camp Hill that I'm aware of that has that in their stated mission. And it's a joyous place to be. And, you know, I had my office right there, right in the middle of everything. So, I mean, I got kind of wrapped into it pretty quickly, probably within that first year, because it's a wonderful thing to do. At the time, I was traveling a lot, so I probably missed a lot of things. But as time was going on, I joined some different working groups in Camp Hill Hudson. I joined the finance group, and I joined the core group. And I don't know if Cam will hear this. Cam was the director before I was, who essentially convinced me that I should take over her role as the executive director. And, you know, to be honest, it took some convincing because it's a hard job.
Yes, I hear. We laud you for it.
So, yeah, it did take a little while for me to make that leap, just because I knew kind of the level of commitment there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was the decision wasn't about me. It was about all of you.
Be of service. So it kind of came back in a different way after having that on the playground.
There's a Carl Koenig quote. Carl Koenig was the founder of Camp Hill. And Michael's heard me read this quote many times. I won't read the whole thing. I'll paraphrase it, which Carl Koenig talked about being a servant more than a leader.
Yeah.
And to be have a monk-like approach to that, and I really tried to, and still do, try to live that.
Mm-hmm. And I haven't read that verse in a while. That makes me want to go grab it again. Be more of a servant than a leader, and that gets back to the side-by-side kind of what you mentioned before, with those walks with the individuals you were helping.
And to be a listener.
To be a listener.
More than someone who's ordering people. You're keeping order more than you're ordering.
Yeah, and that's a fascinating thing, because if you're the ED, it's executive kind of is action.
Yeah.
And yet you have to listen to when you need to take action. So
you're carrying out the action that's the will of the people that are around you. Yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned music a little bit earlier, but we want to know how you You did mention how you got into playing music later, yeah. But what was your kind of first memory of really saying, wow, I really am taking to the guitar, which is your primary instrument, right? Like, do you have a specific moment where you're like, I think I really want to do this, and how would you describe the music you play?
Yeah, so it was some years of playing music as like a keyboard player before I picked up the guitar, and it was really because I was playing music with this guitarist. His name's Chris Monahan, wonderful guitar player. And I don't know, like his approach to that instrument and his tone just made me really want to play guitar. But that was like 2-3 years into playing together. So I didn't start playing guitar till I was 23. Hmm. Because I had moved into this apartment that kind of had a kind of rehearsal space that just had a lot of instruments around, so I was really fortunate I could pick up any of them and mm-hmm. play the guitar, which became, yeah, like a real passion for me. The music I'm playing these days is primarily based on the Rudolf Steiner's planetary scales, and I'll play some of those for you in a bit. You know, so there is acoustic music in that, which is all I brought today. There's electronic elements to that as well, because there's like a duality to, I guess, the music I play that can be very earthy and acoustic and then also very kind of electronic or experimental, which is actually how I first learned about WGXC and Wavefarm and all the cool stuff that goes on there.
Yeah, that we're going to have you play a song from one of your albums from the Planetary Scales in a minute. But I think also the first time, I think you were not the ED yet, but I remember my first real impression memory of you is when you and others, sound makers, had some event at Olana that was like using the elements of nature that you would find on Olana and just making sounds. I don't know if I would even say music, but soundscapes, Mike. Yeah. And I remember seeing you and others, and you were, you know, using the leaf and so on. And so it might have looked ridiculous. I love the juxtaposition of how serious, not serious, but how reverent. And I'm always someone that goes between being reverent and sort of a little bit silly. But I mentioned to you afterward, I said, you know, it sounds like you all are trying to, like, tap into, like, the Andy Goldsworthy version of sound.
Yeah.
And you said, yeah. You were, like, very emphatic, like, yeah, that's it. And
that is it.
And I wonder, yeah, if the song you're going to play kind of comes out of this, just coming from the elements, you said earthiness and yet electronic and... Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the name of that fundraiser you used to have there at Olana. Do you remember that?
What's the called, Woodshed? I don't remember.
But it was a Wave Farm event.
A Wave Farm.
It was, WGXC fundraiser event. And we were performing as part of the John Cage Trust. Mm. So there is this sort of serious academic element to that. We were performing a John Cage piece called Branches. Mm-hmm. So there's this serious academic element, and then there's the the fun element of that. And that, yeah, is definitely, I relate to that well. And, you know, being a woodsy guy.
Hello.
playing that there was really special, because you have to acquire the bulk of the instrumentation from the surrounding area. You bring a cactus.
True.
You bring a cactus?
You bring one.
Cactus.
A cactus.
That's indicated in the composition. But you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
In the John Cage?
Yes.
Okay.
And the durations are calculated ahead of time that we each play. So it's all very intentional. We're timing each other and stuff.
I see.
But the instrumentation is fun because you go collect it.
Yeah.
And there are certain pieces that he wanted you to have, and then there's others you can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should do another one of those. But in the meantime, you do have your guitar right here in the studio.
Yeah.
Tell us, and I mean, by the way, you have several albums, and I, you know, kind of took a peek on Bandcamp and I think Spotify. But what's this album and, the song?
Yeah, I'll play for you. It's Thursday, so we'll play Jupiter. Jupiter is the planet of the day. So this is, I'll play an acoustic version of Jupiter, and I'll also do a little kind of Jupiter improvisation in there as well. The first part of this piece you can hear on the Bandcamp release, the Planetary Music series, which features these recordings for Jupiter, feature my buddy Dan Pell, who I want to mention briefly because Dan just had a radio performance go live yesterday on XPN. So if folks mm-hmm. are into this, they should go listen to Dan Pell.
Very good.
Yeah. That's good to see.
So you'll get the guitar ready, and there's beautiful artwork on this planetary scales. When you go to the Bandcamp, you'll see
there is I should have mentioned that the artwork for that series is by this artist Lena Algahov, really talented art therapist.
Okay, so here it is, Jupiter.
Don't touch Nathan.
Thank you.
That was really nice.
Thank you.
Do the other songs complement, or do they kind of, meaning from the Planetary Scales album, do they kind of speak to each other, or does one go into the next?
Yeah.
How would you describe that?
If you wanted to kind of have an experience of those, you should listen to them on the day, right? Moon on Monday, Mars on Tuesday. That's a fun experience and something I do sometimes where I'll play them for myself. One a day. Listening to them all back to back can be kind of a funny experience because they aren't they don't relate to the energy of the day very well.
Yeah.
You know, if you do that. You could do that though. In terms of do they speak to one another, not only if the planets are meant to speak to one another, you know? The sun doesn't really do that at all, you know.
Yeah, that's more of a celestial being than a planet.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas the moon is a reflection.
Yeah.
Or reflects all the energy in the universe. The Mars wants to talk to everybody.
Yeah. That's funny because I was born on a Monday and I feel like I reflect. People tell me I do very good imitations, or Jody does. Get born on a Monday and you can reflect. What day was everybody born on? Do you know?
I don't know that.
You don't know what day? How about you, Kim? Do you know what day you were born?
I was born at 3 a.m. on a Tuesday.
On a Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Yeah, it's Mars.
You have a bit of fire in you, yeah? Mm-hmm. What about Kelly?
She's wearing red.
Yeah, Kelly, what day of the week were you born?
I can't remember that far back.
Well,
that's a good answer.
Here's to not remembering when the day you were born. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
Actually, it was December 11th, 1976, but I forget the actual day and time. Mm.
I've heard you play this play the music in other spaces and heard it online. I enjoy it. I recommend people go and see it. I'm going to actually skip to another question, though, because it relates. You have an upcoming music event. Yeah. Do you want to put a plug in?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a great monthly series at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill called the Sunday Night Swim. And, I'm going to play for the first time live, I think. I'm going to play Venus. I don't usually get to play Venus because Venus is Friday.
Yeah.
And during Holy Week, we don't play music on Friday.
Yeah, because it's silent.
It's silent. So I've never played Venus for people, and this is like a 40-minute version of Venus.
I don't see that on the question sheet about what you're asking them.
We've got a cheat sheet here, listeners, by the way. We're jumping around. I wonder here. Let's see. Do you want to ask your question, Kelly, about the CREATE organization?
Oh, come on.
You were real keen to ask him about that, and that, yeah.
Tell us about the CREATE organization and how you got involved in it.
CREATE's the Arts Council for Green Columbia Schoharie Counties, and I was their interim director after I left Camp Hill, and I'm still involved in that org because I think they do cool things. They primarily provide grants to artists and also are a community-based art gallery. Just had a really cool show open recently there, a women's show. And they have a children's show coming up, I think. I'm not the one to plug CREATE, really. But it's a cool organization. And the reason how I got involved there, I think, or what drew me in there was people being involved there that I respected and thought would be fun to work with. And I was right. And it's a great, great place.
Yeah, and it's is a Catskill base, Greene County base.
It is the gallery's in Catskill, but they provide Arts Council services to three counties. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I think they're doing great work, and it's local. So and they Camp Hill Hudson was got a grant.
You're
from
a grantee.
So,
yeah.
I wanted to ask you something about, and so. We're on the last page, Kim. I actually wanted, and in different ways you alluded to, you know, the earthy and the electronic. But technology, you and I have had one-on-one conversations about how we as human beings engage in it, either consciously or unconsciously, and we were even part of a wider group conversation recently. Where this example was given about you know, most tools that we as human beings use, it's kind of something that isn't necessarily attached to our body, and that we, you know, if we have a, we have to, well, we need to get a hammer, nail this nail in the wall, we pick it up, we use it, and then when we're done, we put it away.
Yeah.
And it's left there. You know, we have utilized the tool.
Yeah.
And I know you're kind of one that is an advocate of being consciously engaging with the technology, I think is a fair way of how you said it. But the aspect of the cell phone in particular is that we can sometimes be, instead of using the cell phone as a tool, the cell phone can maybe turn the table and use us, and
it does that,
that the cell phone's picking us up, and that you know, the constant notification dictates to us what we engage in, rather than us using it for what we need. And so, I'm just wondering if you can talk about that phenomenon. And
well, how much time do we have?
Yeah, I would say 2 minutes.
Oh, 2 minutes.
Oh,
but
man.
But you feel that this isn't talked about in wider circles.
It's delicate in the music world, I think, because I don't want to come across kind of critical of other people's creative practices or anything. I do think it's important to use those tools intentionally. I love technology, and I make a lot of electronic-based music. They are tools to me. There are elements of that I'm really cautious about for myself, which is I'm cautious to not acquire a piece of equipment so that I can go perform or record and sound like that piece of equipment, and that's very easy to do, very easy hole to fall into. I only want a tool if it fits into my kind of creative process or the workflow that I have. The other thing that's important to me is to always have a human compositional element.
Yeah.
Generative music is really popular in the electronic world right now. There is a generative element to what I'm doing with electronic music, but it's only an element, and it has to be, in my work, met with like human composition. I'm interested in, you guys must have read it from Bandcamp or somewhere. I'm interested in that intersection. I think that's interesting. I also believe, which is a little bit of paraphrasing Rudolf Steiner, that if we do not engage with it and act with it intentionally, it will carry on without us and do things that maybe we don't want it to do. And in the creative world, I think that's just so incredibly easy. There's questions that are always arising for me about what is it am I harnessing and what is it that I'm doing with all of that, and where am I in that? And that's just the journey I'm on. I find all that really interesting. Cell phones are a whole other addiction.
Yeah, it does get into an addiction, but it was an example that I think most people can relate to in terms of a broader conversation. I think, what am I harnessing as it relates to technology? Is that a good way to, a broader way for us to just be like when we're engaged with whatever technological
devices? Am I harnessing something of my own creation, or am I amplifying something of artificial creation? And I'm personally not that interested in that for myself. I don't mind going and hearing other people do it, but it's not necessarily my own creative pursuit.
We'll have to leave it at that, because we have a couple. But thank you. We have Lori. Shall we ask him? Tell us about your new job, your upcoming job. You want to ask him?
What kind of job do you do, Nathan?
Your new job.
So next week I start a new job at an organization called the Healthcare Consortium, which is right down the street here, right around the corner.
Healthcare Consortium here in Hudson.
Another great org that is part of like a rural health network and helps provide access to healthcare for people.
Yeah. So you're looking forward to that?
I am really excited about it.
Good luck to you on that.
Good luck.
And then Kim has we have two questions left here. Kim and Kelly. Yeah.
Do you have any hobbies, and what do you do in your spare time?
Music's definitely a big hobby of mine, and that's I devote a lot of my free time to that. I raised two boys, so that also consumes a lot of my time. They're 12 and 15. collect records, listen to records.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We love records.
Yeah, I do a lot of that. Go to Spikes in Catskill for fun and do a lot with that. I used to do a lot of hiking. I don't really do a lot of that anymore. Maybe I've spent enough time in the woods. Maybe
hiking.
I would love to join you side by side, Nathan.
Maybe I've had it.
Maybe we can find some objects, too, that can be sound.
We could go perform branches together down at High Falls or something.
Oh, yes. How about that, could. Everybody? Shall we perform branches, Kelly?
You need only three people. You need three people.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a trio performing for branches.
Oh, so it sounds like you've done this before.
I've done it before.
Oh, my God. Branches. Okay.
Branches.
Well, we won't keep at...
No.
You shouldn't try this at home, right? That's not for the
you
listeners.
Can. No, you should.
You can do three branches at home.
You need two friends.
Two friends. Yeah. Okay. I'll take you up on that.
Go ahead, Kelly.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice on how to lead a good life?
Oh, that's a good, great question, Kelly. Did you write that question? It's really good.
That is a good one.
You know, I give this advice to my children a lot, is that you have to do things that bring you joy. That the pursuit of happiness, and Michael knows this from Carla Pietzner, finding joy is more powerful to me than trying to look after happiness. So I try to do things and surround myself by people that bring me joy.
That sounds...
And what is the song we usually sing? I'm not going to try to sing it now, but we've got joy down in our hearts. Deep, deep down in our hearts.
Yeah.
J-O-Y, down in our hearts.
Kelly's
not wanting to sing.
No,
deep, deep
wanna,
down in our hearts.
I don't
want to
sing it. We need Nicholas for that one, yeah, Kelly. Nobody sings that like Nicholas.
Finding joy.
Joy. Yeah.
Well, it's been a joy chatting with you and hearing you play. So thank you, Nathan.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me. It was awesome.
And this was Live by Life with the Camp Hill Hudson Radio Group on WGXC 90.7 FM.
That's Nathan.
was Catskill-based artist Rodney Allen Greenblatt. His 2018 electronic album, Beep Beep Type Music, and the song Memo to Self, Get It Together. Here's Hudson musician Emily Ritz with the song Deepness from her 2018 local release, Pattern Recess.
Lawmakers are calling on the EPA to keep dredging the Hudson River. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand has sent a letter to EPA Administrator Michael Regan asking him to accept findings that the agency's earlier dredging efforts failed. Levels of polychlorinated biphenols, or PCBs, dumped into the river by General Electric are still high, making the water hazardous for nearby municipalities that use it as a primary drinking water source. Ned Sullivan with the nonprofit Scenic Hudson worries about the health impacts of these chemicals.
It is associated with cancer, neurological and respiratory disorders. The primary pathway for human exposure is eating fish. This is a big deal because there are people who are continuing to subsist on Hudson River fish.
The EPA has warned against eating fish caught in the river between Troy and Hudson Falls. An assessment by the group Friends of a Clean Hudson River finds current sediment recovery rates won't allow for natural recovery in fish. GE completed 2 of 3 sediment collection programs last year. A third program to collect deeper samples takes place this year. Other agencies have accepted that dredging failed. In 2015, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration reported GE didn't do enough dredging. Sullivan contends the primary reason previous efforts failed is because they weren't extensive enough.
Even before the cleanup was undertaken, it was known in public that there was roughly twice the amount of contamination that the cleanup plan was based on.
Once the EPA accepts the findings, the agency can examine different options for remediating the river, which will most likely be more dredging. However, Sullivan says that could change with emerging technologies. This is Edwin J. Vieira for New York News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This is exactly the type of chaos that we expected when the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Women are being forced to grapple with the devastating consequences of action by Republican elected officials.
In the wake of Alabama's Supreme Court ruling that embryos have the rights of children, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says President Joe Biden will call on Congress to restore access to reproductive health care. Democrats have been campaigning on abortion, and Vice President Kamala Harris is blaming former President Donald Trump for recent court restrictions on it at events in the swing state of Michigan. Trump's rival Nikki Haley had a son through artificial insemination. She told NBC Tuesday that embryos are the same as babies, but then quickly changed her tone. Haley says she wants a federal abortion ban, but clarified her in vitro fertilization stance on Newsmax yesterday.
Be very careful how you do this, because number one, you don't want to take those fertility treatments away from women. It is very important that women like me have the ability to have that blessing of a baby.
Nevada Republican Senate candidate Sam Brown and his wife Amy appeared on NBC Wednesday. Amy Brown said she deeply regrets getting an abortion at 24, and her husband said he would not vote for a federal ban.
I respect the law that the voters put in place over 30 years ago that it grants access for women up to 24 weeks. And so, no, I will not vote on a federal abortion ban.
Meanwhile, half a dozen blue states are acting to protect access to abortion pills through telemedicine and the mail, including for patients in other states. Drexel University professor of law David Cohen says the courts in those states would not enforce the laws in other states that make those pills illegal.
So say a New York doctor mails pills to Mississippi and Mississippi tries to prosecute that doctor. New York's saying, we're not going to help with that. We're not going to send that doctor to Mississippi. We're not going to have our courts force that doctor to participate in any way.
On Thursday, a Texas judge ruled that the state's Crown Act doesn't apply to school districts' dress codes. That's a blow to Houston High School student Daryl George, who sued his district after being suspended over his hairstyle.
Throughout all these years, throughout all the fighting for the black history that we've already done, we still have to do this again and again and again. It's ridiculous.
Meanwhile, the New York Times says state Republican parties in about half of battleground states are suffering from what is called dysfunction, debt, and disarray. The Times cites infighting and cash problems in Georgia, Arizona, and Michigan, among others. And finally, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has said he has no intention of serving as vice president. In a recorded call reported by two newspapers, he did leave open the option of another White House run. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We're in Arizona today, where a new and normally mundane election procedure manual for election officials has attracted not one, not two, but three GOP lawsuits. Arizona's Secretary of State issued the updated manual in January after review by the state's governor and attorney general and a 15-day public comment period. January 31st, House and Senate GOP leaders challenged six new provisions, one of which tells counties they must certify elections by the statewide deadline or risk county results not being counted by the state. In 2022, conspiracy theory-driven Cochise County commissioners tried to block certification. Another suit by the National and State Republican Committees argues the 15-day public comment period should have been 30 days and takes issue with seven provisions, including allowing early voting mail ballots to be sent out of state and allowing federal-only voters with no citizenship papers to vote in presidential elections. The Arizona GOP has used proof of citizenship as a voter suppression tactic aimed at Native American voters, some of whom do not have birth certificates. A suit filed February 13th by the Arizona Free Enterprise Club contends new rules protecting voters from threats and intimidation violate the free speech rights of poll watchers. The rules come after masked and armed vigilantes were stationed at ballot drop boxes in 2022. We have more details at American Democracy Minute.